Dolphinville. Dolphinville Radio. Welcome. Welcome, planetary people, galactic civilizations, dolphins and whale lovers and aficionados. We're here again to have another experiment in time and space. Today's guests are Joseph and Catherine, part of our community here in Dolphinville, and somebody who I've known for the past couple of years as being some real interesting people to share some of their information about what they've experienced here as living a part of the Big Island. So welcome you guys. I'm really happy to have you both here. Thank you, Joseph and Catherine, both for joining us today.
Thank you.
So before we get into some of the things that we're going to share with these guys today, I just wanted to bring you up to date. This program is being brought to you by Randy Barris and the good people at Photon.net. This is kind of like a freebie that he's floating up here because we all feel that this type of information, this kind of informational flow, is really important for the planet right now. We're reaching out into little fibers of light that go all over the planet. It's not that we're dealing with tons of people here, folks, but we're talking about certain people in key places, and this information is getting out. So I appreciate all of you who are listening in your little groups around your computers and enjoying the information. I would encourage you, if you do have questions of the guests, we are taking questions at broadcast@dolphinville.com. Should you have any interesting queries, we'll try to get to them before the show is over, but please feel free to send something in, and if we don't get to it this week, then maybe we can address it in a future program. In the weeks ahead, I'm going to try to do some more dialogues. I call it the Dolphinville Dialogues with different people who live here in the community, people who've been a part of this transition from the new millennium, new ways of thinking, new ways of being. In fact, when I put together Dolphinville as a concept last year, it was a cyberspace intended to be a community networking terminal. And the people who come to Dolphinville are encouraged to come and play and talk dolphin, play in the cyberwaves with one another with a conscious intention to expand their minds into joy, expand our hearts into joy. We always try to gather together in a mode of celebration, and that's what I try to do here on the radio show. So this is supposed to be happy and fun, and although we do try to cover some interesting topics and some of them get a little heavy at times, just remember, we're here to laugh and smile and to let it flow through us with a liquid consciousness. You know, many of us have come to the Big Island of Hawaii because we felt a calling to be close to the dolphins and whales in this particular area of the planet. It happens to lie on a very strategic latitude of 19.5 degrees. And for those of you who have studied sacred geometry, you might recognize that the Merkaba, which is the star tetrahedrons, do fit perfectly inside of a sphere. And the apexes or the bases of both of those spinning tetrahedrons happen to fall at 19.5 degrees. It's been noted as an upwelling spot on many of the planets in our solar system. Jupiter is probably the best example with that standing storm that never seems to move. We've also noted astronomically that the sunspots seem to come right out of 19.5 degrees and evolve towards the equator of the sun. So we know and realize that there's an interesting and very direct energy relationship to that. And lo and behold, here on the Big Island, we have the volcano, which is going off and flowing with liquid fire, which is Earth being born. Pele's energy, the goddess Pele in Hawaiian tradition, is the feminine aspect of fire and fluidity, creativity and destruction, all mapped into one. And it just so happens we'll be talking about some of those aspects today with our guests, because a lot of their work has to deal with some of these dual aspects in our nature and how they look as astrological signs and the Voyager cards. But the significant upwelling is an electromagnetic energy, and it's a point that is really unique on our planet. We sit here in the middle of the Pacific Ocean between east and west, and I think the people who come here feel a dynamic influx from both sides. It's kind of like the point of hemisyncing, I call it, which is to borrow a phrase from the Monroe Institute. Both hemispheres are working in synchronicity here. So we have a whole planet possibility, a whole blended harmonic that's coming right out of here. And this pulse point, many would agree, is a potential point of light here, and this is kind of a magical, mystical place. We all consider it paradise, but paradise of ancient Lemurian heritage. We all sense, and I've felt many, many direct correlations and connections to the ancient Lemurians that may have been right on these shores, walked on these very lands. And if not in physical form, at least etherically, their presence is still very much felt in Dolphinville. Many of us actually have experienced what we would call multidimensional awareness as a result of being here and in the gentle and open proximity of the loving dolphins and whales. Almost everybody has experienced a profound sense of wonderment and sensations of deep love from the cetaceans, and they've been moved to our very core of our beings. I know the dolphins and whales, for me and many of the people, present a consciousness of acceptance and connectivity to anyone who's open to the experience, and have always reflected unconditional love to our emotional bodies. It's really quite amazing and heartfelt. They're great masters of existence, and they're exquisite teachers to anyone who may open their hearts and minds to this new level, another level of being. So what we're doing here, and a lot of us who've been felt and pulled here, is striving to become a conscious community of people, and we're actively participating in a new way of being and thinking with one another. There's no more veils of separation and secrecy. We're trying to see what it's like to actually live in a sphere of unconditional love. What does it feel like? It's good to talk about. It's more difficult to live by it, but we're giving it a shot. Towards this end, we gather together in different times in body and spirit to share first of all, our mutual love for the dolphins and whales and the whole planet ocean, as I like to call it, and the planet ocean that cradles us with her beautiful fluidity and liquidness and the abundance and creativity. My hope personally is that we might focus our collective attention and direct an energy beacon from this dynamic pulse point, this portal, and send it out, celebrating our love and commitment to a higher vibration and an intentional being, participating in whatever way we can, wherever possible, wherever we're coming in on the etheric or physical plane. This is all about intention. It's our attitude. I sincerely believe that it's something that's affecting us all right now, and I'm asking each of you to contribute with your thoughts and deeds and to help promote the wave of light energy that we're calling love and dolphin energy. Let it project out into all the fragile aspects of this atmosphere right now. And I'm thanking all of you for listening and caring for participating in this co-creation process. So that's my little spiel about Dolphinville. I hope you all resonate with that on one level or another. And I want to welcome Joseph and Catherine, Joseph Mina and Catherine Andren, who are here to join us today. I do want to get into so many different things. Catherine is somebody who arrived at the island about the same time, a little bit later than Joseph. They met at one of Joan Ocean's meditations and became actively involved in a partnership, and it's really affected their lives. But let me ask, collectively, I'll start with Catherine. What brought you here to the Big Island, Catherine, and welcome.
Thank you, Douglas. Before I moved out to Big Island, I lived in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I was training there as a holistic healer training, and I practiced massage therapy and different styles of energy work and body work there before I moved out to Big Island in the year 2000. And back in 1999, I came to Hawaii for my own personal rejuvenation retreat. And I was really fortunate to have some friends here on Big Island where I had the opportunity to swim with dolphins in the wild. And it was really one of those experiences, swimming with the dolphins, that called me back here to call this place home for me. I was doing a lot of my own personal healing and cleansing, and at the time when I saw 12 dolphins under me, I immediately related those 12 lined up in a row as the strands of my DNA. And as they came up from underneath me, I just felt every cell in my body vibrate. And on some level, I had an awareness or an understanding that they were directly affecting my DNA. And so, going back to New Mexico after that point, I felt like I really had deepened my sense of my quality of touch with people. Mm-hmm. And also going back, I realized that the High Mountain Desert was no longer my home, that I wanted to be back on Big Island. And about 9 months later, exactly a honing in gestation period, I moved here in April 2000 and met Joseph shortly afterward. So I'm really glad to be here.
That's kind of a neat story, and I know that it relates to the calling that we all felt. 2000, of course, was a biggie. We all were anticipating some huge event. And I think it was a big non-event for most of us in terms of the computer meltdown, but when we do look in retrospect, I think we all went through some profound changes during that time. Now, Joseph, you've been here a little bit longer, and you actually have been back and forth between the island and the mainland a number of times. Is that correct?
Oh, boy. My brother first came to the island in 1978, Big Island, in fact, and when he came back and reported to the family how magical Hawaii was, everybody kind of looked at him like, yeah, okay. And months later, there he was, moving to Hawaii, much to the dismay of many people in the family. For me, it was a portal, because in the 2 years he was out here, his messages back to me started triggering old memories. So by the time I made it out here in 1981, I believe it was, I knew Hawaii, and my entrance was into the island of Maui well before it started to become as developed as it is today, and experienced several deja vus. I had known this place. I had walked the high mountain passes of Haleakala. I just knew it. Then in 1988, my brother was married and came back out here again. Well, in 86, I came out here also. To see Halley's Comet from Haleakala. And I was astonished. I was just simply astonished at the beauty of the night sky.
Were you involved with stars at that time? We call you the star man here because you're so fabulous.
Star man. Yeah, when I was 5 years old, my parents gave me a telescope. And I have been looking out and up ever since. And so to see the magnificent night skies of Hawaii just touched my heart so deeply. I found myself passionately engaged with the heavens like never before. So in 1988, I came to Hawaii for my brother's wedding, and we met him on the Big Island. It was my first journey into Big Island in all the times that I came out to Hawaii. And I spent a night by myself out on the fields of Volcanoes National Park. And the sky was so brilliant with light from the stars. The moon, it was a new moon time.
When you say the fields, you mean the lava fields.
The lava fields, yeah, the lava fields. I felt like I was standing on the surface of the moon.
Yeah, exactly.
And the starlight was bright enough that I could actually see my hand with a faint glimmer of light. And I knew in that moment that I wanted to live on Big Island. And my head immediately told me, ain't going to happen. So when I went back to my real life back in the East Coast, there were definite shifts that occurred in me, and I started finding myself deeper and deeper into the spiritual essence of why I'm on this planet. And I started looking at the stars in a much deeper way. I started looking at the astrological aspects of in the heavens, and it brought me to a very different understanding, so much so that I found myself again out here in 1991 on Big Island to see the total eclipse of the sun.
Oh, yeah.
And witnessed that from Volcanoes National Park. That in itself was an extraordinary journey for me of trust and a leap of faith. And then a year later, here I was again on Big Island, this time to do a shamanic journey with a group of people. And in that 10, 12-day period, I literally went to the depths of my being and to the height of heights and experienced things inside of me that I could not even begin to recount in this short period of time.
This was on the volcano side of the island, though.
It was on the volcano side of the island primarily, yeah, and in concert with several of the island's kahunas, experienced kundalini and experienced many things, so much so that when I returned back to the mainland, I literally had no concept or idea of who I was relative to everything else that had been going on in my life. And I started practicing body work with people, and in that sense, as I practiced body work, I realized that I was accessing into information within my being that came from ages past. I was literally getting downloaded. I was waking up in my sleep doing body work on my pillow and wondering, you know, where is this coming from? And as it was coming in, it was not a surprise. It was like, oh, yeah, I remember this, and I remember this. And I found myself in a very, very amazing way shifting from a career as an accountant, of all things, to a person practicing energy work and body work and looking at astrology charts and playing with tarot cards and basically losing my mind.
A different kind of accounting, we might say.
A very different kind of accounting.
Yeah. Well, the shamanic journeying, you said, were a part of the Polynesian shamanistic traditions then. Is that correct?
That's so true. There are definitely rites of passage that I went through. And
well, we know how associated they are with the stars. The history is that they sail from Tahiti thousands of miles by being able to follow the stars. Hokulea is the star of gladness, which we know now is Arcturus. And they use that as the as the way to guide them here.
Yeah.
So, the history of star gazing is very much a part of that. Did you feel that you were part of the ancient Hawaiian traditions or more contemporary? That is to say, going back before the Tahitians were here, or what aspect were you tying in on?
Well, I remember reading James Michener's book, Hawaii, and the thing that intrigued me about that book were the first several chapters where he talked about the development of the islands, the volcanic development, and then talking about the Polynesians and their journeying from the Tahiti and Bora Bora north to the islands and following the Pleiades and the other star systems, and how enchanted and entranced they were by the fixed star, by the North Star that they had never seen before, that seemed to stand still in the sky while everything else moved around it. And as I read that account, it just stirred a lot of old thoughts and memories about, I understand that, I realize that. I didn't have a specific life that I could attach to in some other time, but when everything that he wrote about made a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. Of course I've sailed the oceans. Of course I've used the stars to navigate. Mm-hmm. And those kind of experiences were quite instrumental in where I'm at right now.
Mm-hmm. And when did you decide to come here this last time? You've been here several years.
Well, my first dolphin swim here was in 1997.
Okay.
I had an amazing swim with 8 dolphins, and then the next day I had another amazing swim, and in that swim, two of the dolphins passed underneath of me and let loose what we call a bubble ring, this large ring of air that just surfaced up, and the person that was swimming with me, we both swam down and through the bubble ring. And after I swam through the bubble ring and came back up, there was a dolphin pod ahead of me, and I just felt such a wave of love come through me. Mm. And it made such a strong impression on my being that I knew that I would never be the same.
Mm. Add another layer of your experience.
Another layer. I had, also in 1997, I had facilitated a retreat here, a shamanic retreat that included 10 people. And that deepened my connection to the island. It was very Pele-oriented, and beach burials in the sands of Puna and tidal pools and going to the mountain and all those things. They continued to stir deep memories in me. So that when I practiced body work, when I practiced with people, it wasn't that I was remembering things that I had been taught in this life. It was more I was accessing core information that I had known from other lifetimes.
Mm.
And then from there I thought, well, great, I'm going to move to Big Island. Well, life had other intentions. And all of a sudden I found myself off to Australia. And I was in Australia for about a year and a half. I went there for 3 weeks. Here I was a year and a half later.
Really?
And went through an amazing inner process in Australia and New Zealand that further defined my connection to spirituality and healing, and also to the Voyager tarot cards.
Mm. Is that where you ran into the Voyager deck there?
I ran into the Voyager deck in 1995. A person that I met in Atlanta was someone who had traveled with the creator of the deck, James Wanless, and then he moved to Australia. So when I was in Australia, I caught up with him, and that just reinforced that whole understanding of the Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
After I left Australia, I came back and I felt like I was starting to put my life together back on the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
And off I went to Europe because I felt called to meet Mother Mira in Germany. And
Mother Mira?
Mother Mira is amazing. She's kind of it's the same vibration as Amaji. She's an avatar.
Mm-hmm.
She's in near the Frankfurt area in Lützburg. And in the interactions that I had in her presence, I knew it was time to really solidify my presence as home, and I came to Hawaii.
Hmm.
And 1999, December of 99, I came here, led another retreat in March of 2000, and then the door opened and Catherine appeared.
Uh-huh. And you found each other.
Yeah, we found each other.
Yeah. So I would like to continue to talk about both of your experiences with the dolphins and the whales, because that seems to be the common denominator. And had you both swum with dolphins and whales before you met each other then?
That's right, Douglas.
Uh-huh.
We both had our own experiences, but what was funny is that right after Joseph and I met, we somehow synchronistically continued to see each other every day for an entire week,
uh-huh.
almost without making plans, generally in the water or at the beach. So we had some really sweet dolphin swims together, and really the first 2-3 months of Joseph and my partnership, there was a lot of play and a lot of playful spontaneity.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the common things that we both love about living on Big Island is how heightened the elemental energies are here.
Mm.
So the dolphins have their very magical presence in the water, but we're also so jazzed when we experience the volcano or looking at the night sky or walking these lands. And so we had a lot of, there's a lot of creative energy, a lot of creative juice here that really tied us together.
I know one of my personal experiences when I met a person here several years ago, and the dolphins seemed to lead us into a little dance. They kind of gave us on some level an acknowledgement of our relationship.
Mm.
And I don't know if that happened to you, and I know other people have had that kind of experience. Like we were swimming together, and then we looked down. The dolphins seemed to be doing something very specific for us. In my case, it was 3 bottlenose dolphins who came into the bay, which is a rare occasion, and showed me something very specific that was unmistakable. It wasn't like, okay, I can write it off as something else. I wondered if you had any experience like that.
There's one that comes to mind right away is when we were out swimming, and we were so joyful that we were together and in the water, and we embraced each other in the water, and I literally felt our hearts blending. And so we just held each other in the water, and all of a sudden we look up, and what do you know? There's like 20 dolphins coming right toward us. I mean, sometimes I see the dolphins and they're under me or they're on the side of me, but we looked up and I saw the front of their faces. I saw their full smiles coming right toward us. They swam under us and around us, and in some ways that was just a huge acknowledgement to me about the dynamic of love that we share together.
Right on. And so now the dynamic has become the lover's card from the tarot deck, and is from the Gemini. And Gemini awakening is actually what you both are calling the work that you're doing. Maybe you can give me a general picture, Catherine, since you've got your hand on the microphone right now. How does Gemini awakening describe what you just said about the coming together with the dolphins?
Well, as you can see, we're really into symbols and symbology. So we chose the name Gemini Awakening in part because of the playful spontaneity of Gemini. When you look at Gemini, it's an archetype of the troubadours. They're the ones who carry messages of light and truth. The essence of Gemini is spontaneous and playful. It's fast, and it's like dolphin energy in some ways. It's very playful.
Gecko agrees with that.
The gecko agrees.
I do too, because I'm a Gemini.
It's also connected to the lovers and the twins.
Mm-hmm.
So we see ourselves as the Gemini is a balancing of the polarities. You can't recognize or acknowledge light without going to dark. So in the body work that we share with people, and even in the readings that we offer or the classes that we offer, we're able to show people the different aspects of the duality and bring it together in a union. And so since we share a union of love, we call the work Gemini Awakening,
mm-hmm.
as we awaken playfulness and spontaneousness with each other, we share that with everyone we come in contact with.
That's great. Joseph, you're going to add something to that, I can see.
Well, it's also awakening a new earth vision. Mm-hmm. And we're all here in Hawaii to live a different way, to embrace living more organically, to be more connected to the natural elements. I mean, we have that gift here in Hawaii where electricity usage is much less than we'll find on the mainland. Mm-hmm. So we vibrate with the elements in such a magical way. So it's awakening to that consciousness within ourselves. And the other night, as you know, we had a magnificent electrical storm over the ocean. And it's not often we see thunderstorms like that in Hawaii.
I haven't seen any likes of this.
I stood out. It was early morning, maybe 2 o'clock in the morning, and I stood out on the steps looking out over the ocean from our home, and everything was dark, and all of a sudden the entire ocean lit up and then went dark again and then lit up. And that metaphor reminds me of what happens in our healing process. You know, we become enlightened. We get all these downloads of information, and then we go in. We go into the depths, and we integrate that, and we work with that. Mm-hmm. And then we come back, and we see another perspective, and then we go in. So there's that yin and the yang that's taking place in our field.
Yeah.
And our intention in the work that we share is that we want our own inner process to match what it is that we offer to people. Neither of us want to offer something to people that we don't live in our own way. And that means that the ability to go in, the ability to feel the density, the ability to feel the light, and to express them in new and creative ways in our life.
Mm-hmm. Metaphors about the lighting, I think it's true. It always brings up things within all of us because, you know, first of all, it's a phenomenon of nature. But it reminds me also, it's like when you are on your spiritual path, oftentimes there'll be a flash of insight in the darkened night. And you get to see the landscape for that brief second, and it's kind of like there's an after image burning out, and you think you know where you're going, and then it's pitch black again, and you're sort of wandering, groping along, and then blink, another flash of light. So it's a wonderful metaphor for a lot of the things that we've experienced coming over to the Big Island around 2000. It was such a loaded time for everybody. Half of us expected the world to come crashing down on some level, and we were prepared to kind of like band together and start the new millennium as maybe starting a whole new leaf of humanity and civilization here on the planet if all the electricity and all the computers had melted, as some people were predicting they might. But I think metaphorically, things did melt. And I do want to get into that a little bit later in the show as we start to developing some of these themes, the Gemini themes, the partnership themes that are part of the new millennium, new relationship issues. But for the time being, we're going to take a little break here, take some fresh air in, and enjoy some of the music of Michael Hammer from his album of the Pleiades. So we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Michael Hammer's wonderful stellar type of music, talking with Joseph Mina, Catherine Andren, Gemini Awakening, and they're sharing some of their personal stories here. We'll do some more, because I'm really curious about some of your take on the dolphin and whale experiences specifically. I know that you've worked with people, you actually do sacred journeys where you take people, of course, to the volcano, because that's such a dynamic, but oftentimes you will escort people into situations and get in the water with the dolphins. And I'd be curious, your own experience was quite dynamic. It brought you together. Have you felt that the others that you've shared that with, have there been any kind of like interesting anecdotes or a story that stands out that you could share with some of the listeners about that?
Our intention in bringing people into the water has not been to be with the dolphins per se, although that sometimes has happened in the past. It's been to help people to play with metaphor. And one example that comes to mind is a woman that was from the Bay Area who was pregnant, and we went into the ocean near the City of Refuge, and her mask kept fogging up on her. And the opportunity was to let go of her eyesight, to let go of her need to see things in order that she believed them, and to just listen. And no dolphins were present that day. In their place, though, was the enchanting sounds of whales toning. And while we couldn't see the whales because they were at a distance, the sound of their tones just filled the bay. And it was so melodic, and she came out of the water transfixed because she had let go of her need to see. So that's an example of how the metaphor can be so profound and so subtle here. Metaphors, in my experiences, are most profound when they're most subtle.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly paradoxical. And I would say that the gift of what we see symbolically is always an important thing to take in and to integrate.
Well, subtlety certainly is a byword. And, the dolphins operate on subtle levels. There's subtle vibrational frequencies that they're able to put out. You mentioned the sound vibrations of the whale tones in the water. Joan speculates, and I happen to agree, that the water becomes charged. The molecules of the water become charged not only with the sound as we hear it, but with information. The vibrational spins seem to carry information. And at different times, you can actually see how profoundly it affects people. They don't have a ready rational explanation for the shift that they just got in. But by the very nature of going into the water, zero gravity, they suddenly find themselves in an altered state. And if you're gently hoping and coaxing them along as a good facilitator, then you recognize that this condition starts to come, and that's where new learnings and new perceptions can easily come in.
That's certainly true, and I've come to appreciate the essence of vibration. Vibration is all around us, whether it's in the water or the air or the land. The sacred journeys have been on land-based most of the time because I feel such a strong affinity to Pele and the volcano. And when I take people to volcanoes, I want it to be a journey of metaphor, a journey of ceremony, a journey of chant, where people have an opportunity to look at their life through the aspect of metaphor and start to understand what wants to change, what wants their attention, what needs to be addressed, and to take that back with them into their community and start to affect change there just by their own beingness. Mm-hmm. So that's the power to me of Hawaii and how it shows up, whether it's in the land, sea, or sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So often people are drawn here. They don't even know why, but their experience is not only affecting them, but it's affecting everybody that they know. It's like the 6 degrees of separation are all being activated by their experience, which is really kind of one of the miracles that take place on the Big Island and when people have these experiences. So, Catherine, how about sharing one of your most profound experiences with the dolphins and the whales, or both?
I was in the water with a whale, and it was really one of the most profound experiences of my life. I mean, we had seen the whale, and it was had its fluke up, and it was kind of tapping the water, and the way that it looked to me, it was like she was beckoning us. It felt as if she was beckoning us. And we just gently slipped in the water and got a little closer. And it really just blew me away to be in the water with that presence that is so loving. And again, for me, I feel it throughout my body. It's very kinesthetic for me. So I was just in awe.
Yeah.
I was just in awe. And it was, it seemed to be a mother and a baby. Mm. So it was a very brief, but very meaningful experience for me.
Mm. Yeah, that is amazing, the presence of the whales.
I had never been in the water with something that was the size of a school bus.
Yes, and like a ballerina.
And like a ballerina, the bubble of energy was so, so large.
Yeah.
And all I could do was just be present. It was no drive or desire to do anything other than just be. And that was quite a memorable day.
Yeah.
I can also think of another experience we had where a dolphin came and swam in circle with us and then all of a sudden branched off and slowly spiraled. And as the dolphin slowly spiraled, there was a stream of bubbles that was coming out of its coming from the dolphin, creating what looked like a helix of the DNA. And Catherine swam through the helix, and I followed her. And the vibration, again, it's a vibration, as Joan was sharing, is infusing us, and we integrate that. And we find more so now that we don't have to be in the water that long.
Mm-hmm.
20 minutes, 30 minutes seems to me plenty. Because I feel very full after about 30 minutes. I want to just go and integrate and be with whatever I've experienced rather than adding more and more and more in because I can't get enough.
Well, we have the luxury of living here.
Yeah,
I know so
yeah.
many people visiting and they yeah. have this, you know, they're very anxious. And I often try to tell people to back off and just relax with it because sometimes even that anticipation and anxiousness will act as a shield that keeps a little separation between
mm-hmm.
Dolphins are very courteous. They're very, very loving and will give us whatever space that we need to have our experience. And I've seen it countless times where people are feeling the subtle kinds of shifts. You can't identify them with any kind of logical, rational thing, but because it's so profound, it acts on us in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Some people get a reaction right away. They go through and have visions and they journey into some realms. Other people, it activates over a gradual period of time so that a week, 2 weeks, sometimes months later, I was telling people one description was that, you know, think of it as if the sound of the dolphins are coming in through your kneecap and it's starting a real tiny little vibration in your kneecap and that's connected to the sinews and muscles and nerves around the kneecap and that vibrates them and it starts to move up your body and slowly goes up through your leg and connects to your spine and slowly moves up your spine and then throughout your limbs and your whole nervous system and then up to your crown chakra. I said very much in that way is the way the energy frequency moves. And then finally, after your body has been activated, at some point you're having a cup of tea and you go, aha, eureka, because intellectually somehow you got it. And it took all that time to get its way up to your brain. And sometimes you even forgot that it was related to that experience. But get ready for it because it does seem to happen.
It seems like there's a lot of biological information in the water. Huge
Indeed.
Amounts. And
Indeed.
I mean, everyone that we've worked with here or people that we've met here visiting and even from our own experience, we know that just being here
mm-hmm.
is transformational.
Indeed. Well, in the middle of the biggest geographic feature on the planet, the Pacific Ocean. It's about water and water consciousness. Our bodies are mostly water. The planet is mostly water. The way we've been thinking has been fixed realities of solid thoughts that's really separated us as land masses and nations and sensibilities and ideologies. And we're starting to melt that and looking at Pele melting solid earth into liquid as it hits and changes to gas as it goes into the ocean. But the liquidness, the liquid consciousness, seems to me to be a very key thing that we're all sharing.
Well, we're going into the age of Aquarius, Douglas.
Yes, it is water bearer age.
Right.
Yeah,
it's an air sign, and
mm-hmm.
it's a water bearer.
Yeah.
And it's all about wave and frequency.
Mm.
So as we are evolving now and tapping into these technologies. Mm-hmm. It's all understanding on a more human level about frequency and wave.
Right. Well, we're looking at different subtle vibrations. We're looking at the way light hits the planet sometimes when we look at vibrations, how liquid consciousness spills out. Tell me, why did you choose the Voyager tarot deck as opposed to one of the myriad of other decks that are out there? The most popular known one is the so-called Thoth or Thoth deck from the ancient Egyptians. And that's where we get a lot of the symbology of the tarot and to mirroring the 52 cards of the deck and then the upper arcanas. But somehow you were drawn to the Voyager, and how was it related to your experience with meeting the man and astrology?
When I first experienced the tarot, which was with the weight deck, I was enchanted by it. I thought it was amazing symbols, but there was something about it that just didn't click for me. And as I mentioned, in 1995, I befriended someone in Atlanta, and he showed me the Voyager deck, and I was mesmerized.
Mesmerized?
Is that a word?
Mesmerized.
Mesmerized, there it is. I was that too. And if any of the listeners, they can type in into their internet browser, www.geminiawakening.com/radio webcast. I think I put webcast.
And that's Gemini with a dash or hyphen separating Gemini.
Well, you can do it together. It, either way, it'll work. But I believe it's /webcast.com.
Mm-hmm.
And
.html.
There's a page there, .html, webcast.html. Boy.
That's also accessible from the dolphinville.com/radio page. So
great.
If you click on that, that'll get you into the Gemini Awakening page.
And on that page, you'll see an example of one of the Voyager cards. We selected the Lover's card. And next to the Lover's card, there's the back of the card. On the back of the card is what got my attention, because it's a cross-section of the DNA. When James Wanless created the Voyager deck in about 1987-88, in concert with the harmonic convergence, he decided that the Voyager, that the tarot as he knew it, and he's a master of the tarot, that the tarot as he knew it had to change to be more up to date with energy as we play with it. And his thought that came to his mind, well, gosh, there's a television show, the Voyager. Well, let's take a voyage of energy. So he named the deck the Voyager, put the DNA template on the back to remind us all that there's many aspects to the DNA that have yet to be activated. Children that are being born on the planet now have a much higher frequency in their DNA natally than we had as children.
Natally, you mean?
Yeah, from birth. I mean, as their cells are developing in the womb, they're getting downloaded with the higher vibration of the planet mm-hmm. as it now exists. So there's a higher level of synthesis that's taking place in their bodies, and the children come out highly charged, highly energetic, and able to process information much more efficiently than we were as children.
But couldn't you say the same of our childhood relative to our parents' childhood?
Absolutely, absolutely, except that what is different now is that there's such an acceleration of this vibration. Things are happening very quickly in time and space.
Information seems to be doubling, tripling arithmetically on a monthly basis, like the computer industry
mm-hmm.
now.
So that's where the Voyager deck spoke to that, because James's intention was to take the war element out of the tarot, which has been a feature of the tarot for a long, long time, and instead to make it more up-to-date energetically. So swords then translated into crystals, which is the mental aspect, how we use our crystalline structure to move energy and thought. And the court cards, the page, knight, king, queen, all of a sudden became the family cards, where you had the child and you had the woman and the man and even the sage energy. So those aspects came into the Voyager, and the next step was, okay, the voyage is taking an energy journey through the archetypes. It was through the magician and the priestess, the empress, the emperor, all the way through the arcana. And it was, how can I experience these things in a more up-to-date energetic way? So the magician, for example, how do I bring spirit energy from the ethers into physical form? How do I create magic around this? where the Empress was, how do I connect with the Earth Mother? How do I connect with the goddess of the Earth? How do I feel the elements? How do I open up the passion and the compassion and love and nurturing and all those things? So when I played with the Voyager, I was learning a whole new language, because the questions weren't what's going to happen next week. The questions more were, what is my ally right now? What is my magic? What is this moment presenting me with? What opportunity? What is my challenge around this? All of these things are a good representation of how this deck works. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to pick a card, because Catherine is writing the card.
Let's have a card.
And the magic right now in this moment, one card. The magic is the stagnation card. And this is such a profound card. It's the eight. Eights are balance cards. Stagnation is how things come to a stasis, or how things come to closure so that something new can begin. And this is a profound card for a lot of us, because the stagnation card encourages us to rest, to really allow the time for integration, to allow the time to just simply be, instead of jumping into 15 or 16 different things because we feel like we have a lot to accomplish in life.
Well, stagnation seems to almost say like dead end, too, or like a stopped motion. You think of a stagnated pond or something along those lines. Go ahead.
Another way to look at this card would to be as the cosmic compost pile.
Okay.
So when things get still or when they get quiet, there's time for a regeneration for new life to occur.
Okay. So how does that relate to now, the now moment, as we're speaking and you pick the card?
Well, maybe it's a commercial break.
No, it's not yet.
Randy. Oh, no.
Well, Randy at Photon is our sponsor for the show, and yeah, photon.net. But let's continue. Like you would start a reading, for example. You pick this as a card, a spontaneous card, giving us an indication of the energy of this moment.
And so I'll ask, what's the energy behind the stagnation card? And I get the courage card. And the courage, the seven of wands, is a card of moving through fear. It literally is the heart rage, core being French for heart, heart rage. It's the brave heart card of the deck. It's how do I step through my fear? So stagnation, in that sense, if the courage is behind stagnation, it's a question to ask, how have I allowed this courage to stagnate in my life? And from there, we can pick some cards that move around that. For example, the next question that comes from this is, okay, if courage is stagnating my life, what's going to be my ally in opening up that awareness? What is going to be my ally in accessing that? And I get the harvest card, the nine of worlds. Harvest is literally about receiving. And it's about also harvesting the very things that we have sown in our life. So the nines are hermit cards, and hermit cards take us inward. And harvest is about allowing ourselves to receive the gifts of life rather than our having to do something in order to make life happen.
For those listeners who are not familiar with the Voyager deck, and I would encourage you to go online and take a look at least the one card they use in the example, the artist who conceived of these did not draw them or paint them. Instead, he did these wonderful photo montages. And so you have multiple symbols and archetypal symbols that you can buy into. And you were mentioning that he changed certain elements in the traditional deck. The worlds were formerly what?
Pentacles.
The pentacles. And the pentacles, of course, we always think of the pentacles and pentagrams as magical symbols. And then, as you say, crystals, or the wands became the crystals, the clubs became...
Well, the swords became the crystals.
Oh, right, that's it.
Yep, and the cups remained as cups, and the wands remained as wands. The cups are more the emotional aspect, the wands are the spiritual aspect. The worlds were replaced the pentacles because it wasn't just anymore our world. It was a myriad of worlds. I mean, we're discovering planets today around star systems that are distances that are incomprehensible. Mm-hmm. So it's not just our world anymore. It's many, many worlds. So how do we embrace the universe and all of its worlds? So that's the essence of the world. So all those cards have some symbol of a planet or a moon on it, indicative of that solar system energy.
Every deck or every card in the world suit has some kind of world. Okay, I get you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is curious. Now, without trying to get a reading out of what we've started here, but you get an idea of how one thing leads to another. It's one archetypal metaphor stacked on another, and then the relationship between each one begins to build a synergistic system of understanding. Now, when you did a read for me the other day, you added to that by looking at my natal astrological chart, mm-hmm. and being able to see how the aspects of what I was pulling out of the deck then applied to the natal aspects of my astrological chart. Now, that's something that you started doing. I know that the tarot and the astrology have been natural companions in the past, but is that something you naturally were doing from the very beginning with the deck?
No, I didn't bring the astrology into it till later. In fact, Catherine and I started looking at astrology as a way of understanding dynamics of what was going on in people's lives who came to us for bodywork sessions. And people would come to us and a lot of things would be stirred up in their life. And we started saying, well, there's more definition here than meets the eye. So before a session, we would look at a person's astrology chart and have an understanding of different cycles, planetary cycles that may have been up. And also we would take the Voyager cards and spread them, and people would pick several cards before a session. For example, what's your magic in this moment? What does your body want you to know in this moment? What's the magic for this session? And that seemed to help the people that were coming to us, because all of a sudden this process had definition, or it had context. Mm-hmm. And it also offered us some insight, because we thought, this is really wonderful that we can see the essence behind the form, so to speak. And in that spirit, we started looking at astrology more of in an evolutionary way. That is something that is evolving. And Catherine had this wonderful insight. Well, the Voyager cards work with us because of all the symbology in the collages. Let's do the same thing for all the archetypes, all the zodiac signs, all the houses. And so she began this amazing process of creating what we now call the astroactivators.
The astroactivators. I'd like to hear more about that. I have seen those, and of course you use those as part of the reading as well. They're kind of like visual aids. And how do you create these, Catherine?
Basically, the old-fashioned way of cut and paste. Uh-huh. But I am learning Photoshop, so I'd like to enhance them a little more.
Okay.
I created them because I could see how easily people related to these Voyager cards. In the Voyager cards, one of the things that makes them stand out is that there's cross-cultural images in here. There's all kinds of images that people can relate to easily, which is different from, I think, a lot of other tarot decks. So when Joseph was giving consultations, or when he and I started teaching classes about the value of understanding your chart and dancing through these archetypal energies, it felt like a natural way to say, let's have a visual cue, let's show people something. Say, you know, picture's worth a thousand words. We can talk about it a long time, but if you look at something, it was a natural way for people to activate and understand the energy behind it.
Well, you guys take this work to the mainland, and you give presentations to groups, and you, of course, do private sessions with people on various levels. Just out of curiosity, I know that there's such a great forum here on the Big Island. People are already, they're into this beautiful nature, and when they get in the ocean and they have encounters with the fish and the dolphins and the whales, do you find that they're much more attuned or open to some of the information that you want to share with them, as opposed to the people who are sort of stuck in Kansas City or wherever you might be?
It seems to me that people who come to Big Island in particular are prime for transformation. So just because this is the island of Pele and we have the gift here of the dolphin and whale energy that surrounds this island, people who come here are ready for something big. And it might not even be something they're conscious of, but it's an awesome opportunity, I feel, for people to ground their experiences with getting touch through bodywork or through gaining a broader perspective by getting the context for finding out possibly what their planetary cycles are or what the energy dynamics are in their chart. I mean, that's, to me, what the charts are all about, is I feel people can understand how they run their energy. And by doing so, it seems I can develop a deeper sense of compassion for themselves and for how they relate to other people.
Go ahead, Joseph.
It's a gift to be here, as you know. It's a gift to live in this magical place. And one of those gifts is our ability not only to take in that vibration, but to bring it with us wherever we go. And so when we travel to the mainland and we have workshops in astrology or we're doing bodywork sessions with people, we're literally acting as a conduit for that mana. I mean, people feel the essence of Hawaii and what we share. And that's such a wonderful gift of being able to take the gift of aloha and extend it. And sometimes being here for an extended period of time, things kind of dull. I mean, I kind of lose touch or lose sight of all that's going on inside of me because I'm so familiar with it. And yet when I go back to the mainland with Catherine or by myself and I'm working with people, I all of a sudden reconnect to that again. I realize, oh yeah, it is there. It is different. And that to me is a really wonderful gift. One of the things of our intentions in Gemini Awakening was also to not only go to the mainland and touch people and bring people the essence of Hawaii, but to have it work in reverse, that we open the door so that people can come here. It's like a segue for them that they can come to the Big Island, and we created what we call a rejuvenation retreat for one or two people where they get to spend 4 or 5 days here. They get to visit the water. They get to walk on the path of the volcano, enjoy the night sky. They get an astrology reading. They get body work. And in that short period of time, they get an opportunity to touch something very deep within themselves that they're ready to experience. And it's quite a gift to be able to hold that space for people. Yeah. We're very fortunate to live on 4 beautiful tropical acres filled with fruit trees mm-hmm. from all over the tropical world, overlooking the Pacific Ocean, seeing Kealakekua Bay in the distance, and to be able to invite people in to spend time with us there mm-hmm. is really a nice thing. It's really something.
Yeah, I think Catherine hit it too. A lot of people who find themselves on the island are ready for a transition. Personally, to me, the transition was a healing one, which I think probably when one thinks about transition, we are all thinking of it in terms of moving to a better state of well-being. So that's a healing process. And oftentimes that means a new level of truth that we can share with ourselves, letting go and shredding a lot of junk that has bogged us down, part of the healing process. And you're right, where you were saying your place is right in between two very, very powerful healing points. The Kealakekua Bay, which is, Kealakekua means gateway to the gods. We've noted that it has a super energy there, portal energy, as people have called it, stargate energy, others have called it. And then just to the left of it, as you look out from your back door, is the place of refuge,
right.
A place of forgiveness, a place of transcending energy. So it seems like you've set yourself up and found the ideal location to do some of this work.
Yeah, the location found us.
Uh-huh.
It's part of the synchronicity of this island, something that we call the Coconut Wireless.
The Coconut Wireless, I love it.
Coconut Wireless,
yeah.
Yeah. Things just happen when they're ready to happen here. I want to return to these 3 cards, too, that I picked because it ties into what we're saying here. You know, the first card was stagnation when courage behind it. It takes a lot of courage to stagnate. It takes a lot of courage to just be and to allow ourselves to get quiet and to slow down. And
so stagnation
just
has a positive element
rather
absolutely. Than a
negative. Absolutely. In this deck, it's a very positive card because it's an encouragement card of literally slow down and regenerate and restore yourself rather than burning the candle at both ends. And that's where the harvest card comes in as an ally. So of course, when we finally slow ourselves down, we have the opportunity to receive. Something that I've seen culturally throughout the world is that as a human race, we are amazing givers and yet haven't quite learned the art of receiving. And in learning how to receive, we finally do something that is so natural to babies that are born. We're touched. I mean, our ability to be touched does not diminish with age. If anything, it increases, that our bodies really want to be touched and nurtured and fed. And so these three cards speak to that. So I'm going to pick another card, and that would be the essence of what our body wants us to know about these three cards. And we get the breakthrough card, another seven. And this is the seven of worlds is how our world can literally change. This is one of the Pele cards of the deck, because on this card is a volcano erupting. So this is where a break happens in our world, and all of a sudden shift happens, change happens. And
hits the fan.
Yeah, so that's that. There's the paradox, you know. So that we stagnate, our world changes, and it invites in brand new energy, and we make a new beginning in a new way. So that's how we'd like to work with the Voyager cards. We'd like to work with them in the context of, here's the opportunity that's being presented to you. How do you want to play with this now?
And what do you call the special pictograms that that Catherine has made?
Astro activators.
Astro activators.
In fact, if you go to the Gemini Awakening site, on a number of the pages, you'll see examples of the astro activators. On our workshop page, you'll see them, and also on the Voyager Tarot consultation page, you'll see aspects of the astro activators.
Good. Well, I do want to cover some more astrological points. And we're going to take another little break right now, come up on some more stellar music from Michael Hammer. And when we come back, we're going to sort of get in some of the astrological projections for 2004. And we can see again how the Voyager deck and the astrology is working together. Joseph and Catherine are very generous with their time. And thanks again for all of you listening. We'll be back in just a minute or so. Thanks. Dolphinville Radio, and thanks to Randy Barris and Photon.net as our provider. Photon.net is an internet service provider. This whole broadcast is being sponsored by them. You know, it's easy to get on the internet with Photon. They provide internet access to over 28,000 local dial-up numbers across the United States and Hawaii, plus a wide range of professional internet services such as web hosting, e-commerce, multimedia broadcasting, of which you're hearing now. We're also developing virtual tours, webmail, and much more that you would expect to use the internet into the 21st century. So I hope all of you are listening and you're getting a clear signal from this broadcast. I would encourage you, if you haven't gone ahead and joined the Dolphinville.com radio, Dolphinville.com members, it is free. What I am doing is providing these archival files to the members while we're keeping kind of like a running archival file for the public to get into depth and find out all of the shows that we've done. You'll need to be a member of Dolphinville. It's pretty easy. You just go online and it says members sign in, and then you just follow the form. And it'll enable you to open up into some of the chat rooms and forums and bulletin boards that are shared with the nearly 300 people who've joined Dolphinville. It's not just the people who live here in the community proper. It's an extended community that's going out all over the planet. We've had people listening from as far away as the Persian Gulf, South Africa. We have an audience in China, in Australia, as well as Europe and across the United States and Canada. So we know that this message is going out, and we hope that you can join us and invite your friends to join us, because it's more fun when you have people all talking together. And we're talking together right now with Joseph and Catherine, Gemini Awakening, who have been bringing their particular perspectives on life and living from the heart. They're both seasoned travelers on this planet and have been trained in the art of body work. They've combined some of their experiences as body workers, and Joseph has added to it the dimension of astrology and the tarot deck, the Voyager tarot deck. And they've developed a new kind of programming where the two of them working tandemly with people. I'd like to get into that. But first, I wanted Catherine to share a little bit more about the astrological aspects and why we feel that the personal dynamics, the natal chart, and the archetypes that are coming out of that are such an important facet of what you're trying to show people.
Thanks. When we look at astrology, we see it as an underlying principle for us, as we call as above, so below. So what's going on in the sky as we watch the planets move through the heavens, it's a symbolic representation for us about what's happening internally. A good example would be last year Mars, and Mars went into a retrograde cycle. And it's a time about taking a step back and going within. This year features Venus retrograde, which Joseph will pick up a little bit later. But before we go up, I'd like to go in a little. So when someone gets their astrology chart done, what you can see is where the planets are in the sky. It's a snapshot of where they are at the moment of birth. And so they, where they are is a symbolic representation of the archetypes of energy that you use that are running through you at any moment in time. So sort of the main players that you'd look at, for example, would be the moon sign. It says, where have I been? What are my innate gifts and talents are? When I look at my rising sign, that's an indicator to me of where I'm going. What am I here to learn? What am I here to acquire in this lifetime? For example, I have Gemini rising. So the other main players, I'd call the Mars and the Venus, which we can look at as the inner masculine and the inner feminine. So again, those words have been highly popularized in relationship study recently. How do I marry within myself? As a woman, I would want to marry my Mars within me. And for men, they would want to marry the Venus within themselves. So getting an understanding of where they are and the energies that they represent can help people, I feel, awaken more into their life purpose and their life intent. So,
well, you say marry as a way of saying partnership coming in and being part of the balance that we're carrying within us. We're seeing a lot of examples of this. Not only are we starting to learn how to balance our own personal energies, we're dividing the right-left hemispheres with hemisyncing tapes. We're seeing that whole brain and whole body balance activity are taking the polarities and finding a medium point, and this is where the point of healing begins. If we're balanced, then we can begin to start to grow internally and externally. Now, you say above, so above as below. That's a Sufi, is it a Sufi statement or a Sufi saying? One associates it with the Hermetic tradition.
Exactly. Yes.
Going into, you know, the occult and the studies from Pythagoras right through the Egyptian mystery schools.
Yeah, it's old and it's still new and pertinent.
Go ahead, Joseph. You wanted to add to that.
I realize as I talk to people that few people have an intimate relationship with their astrological chart. It just has not been part of the culture. In fact, our culture has been sun sign oriented for a very long time, and to us, as we look at a chart, we look consider the sun to be the fuel that you burn. Again, here's the metaphor of the symbol. The sun and the external is a provider of energy. But it doesn't reflect what the essence of the person is. And that's how we start delving into the aspects of the chart. It's creating a script with them about not only life intention, but also where I've been and where I'm going, or what I am and what I am evolving into. So there's a dance that takes place. And then with any dance, there's a give and there's a take. And there's a developed aspect of the chart, as well as a aspect of the chart that is being developed. Now, all of us by nature like to do the easy thing. And so that would speak to the developed aspects of our chart, mm-hmm. that it's very natural, it's very easy to embrace and express those things. The developing aspects of the chart are another matter. Catherine mentioned a little bit ago about the rising sign. Well, when you go outside and look at the sky at any point in time, especially at night because the stars are visible, you'll see a constellation rising in the east. And the mystics have looked at the east as being a gateway or a portal or something that we're moving into. And there's the constellation that is considered the ascendant of the chart, the rising sign. Again, I'll take you back to the Gemini page for this webcast, and at the bottom of that page there's an indication, there's a natal chart, and that natal chart was cast for the magic for today's show. Mm-hmm. And there's a symbol. So if you look at that symbol as being a mandala of energy, that's your toolbox, and that's giving you really clear clues and suggestions about how you can move energy in your life. Mm-hmm. So a teacher said to me a while back, and that's something that I remember, awareness is power. That when you know. And that the more that you allow yourself to know, the more that you can be aware of. And so that's where I feel we can be of service to people, especially in readings, and personal readings, whether they're face-to-face or over the telephone, that we can explore the dynamics archetypally of a person's chart, and help them perceive and understand not only what's up right now, but understand in a broader sense life intention. Why, and it kind of makes sense of these are the steps I've taken in my life. And, oh, of course, no wonder I experienced that. And because it's preparing me for what's going on right now.
Well, thousands of years ago, when we were all sheep herders laying on our backs at night staring up at the stars, of course, astrology had much more. That was our nightly entertainment. That's what we talked about, you know, while we're tending the flocks during the daytime. And I think the whole science, as we know, of astrology probably came from a much more ancient culture. We look at Lemuria or Atlanteans as the archetype of an ancient culture that had a more sophisticated awareness. We have examples of the Mayans who had developed a stone calendar that is not just for when to plant the seeds, but also it seems to be inferring that they were aware of a galactic tendency or a galactic cycle of effect that goes all the way back to the very center of our galaxy and how that affects our life cycles. So one of the ways I tried to understand or came to an understanding when somebody was trying to explain astrology to me years ago, and, you know, the subtle vibrations we're talking about, subtle influences, when they said, well, your body is mostly water, and just as the moon affects the tides, so too the aspects of the planets will affect the subtle water in your body. Would that be a way of looking at it?
Yeah, that certainly speaks to that. I think in a bigger sense, there are tides in the galaxy that vibrate in such a way that attune to our cellular structure and influence the tides in our body and influence the rhythms. When I look at the night sky, what I see is a signature of time. For example, if you look at the sun, you're looking at something that, as it existed 8 minutes ago. It took 8 minutes for the light of the sun to travel enormous speeds to reach our eye, where the moon is a second and a half ago, Mars is hours ago, etc. So when we look at the night sky, we're seeing the past, so to speak. We're seeing it as it was in such segmented pieces that it's helping us go inward. It's so vast and it's so grand that it shows us like a grand mirror of what's going on inside of ourselves. And as we delve into what's going on inside of ourselves, we find meaning and purpose in life. Life all of a sudden takes on a different direction as we embrace the things that we are, that are part of our fabric.
There's different intuitive tools that we have been given. The I Ching, of course, is an ancient intuitive tool. Casting a chart is another way of getting a reading on some aspect, some way of reading the life energies that are coming through us.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that, you know, science, hard science, look at astrology and say, no, it doesn't make any sense because of the very things that you're talking about, the actual timetables of the time that it takes the light to travel from the stars and the different aspects. Some constellations are, you know, millions of light years farther away. So we're not actually getting the physical light at the same time, but we are. When we go beyond the physical, we start to deal with the non-objective aspects of our reality. And these are the new things. I mean, I'm excited about us looking about a time differently. And you describe how each aspect, every astral body represents a different time continuum. And as we're looking and understanding and being able to embrace the idea of infinitesimal different degrees of how everything divides itself up, these are the things that I think that we're moving into. We're letting go of the old, stagnated views of the world, the Cartesian explanation of physical reality. Newton was a good guy and the apple fell on his head, but Einstein took it another level, and now we're ready to move even farther into this abstract, if you will, and using the old tools for an intuitive way, perhaps.
Certainly. To me, a benchmark was in 1968 to 1970 when we first walked on the surface of the moon, when Earth Day was created. I mean, Earth Day came out of all of a sudden our seeing the planet from a distance, mm-hmm. seeing it from the surface of the moon and realizing that here's a planet that doesn't have national lines drawn across mm-hmm. it. It's an organic mass of energy. Mm-hmm. And we live on this. We live on this small blue rock way out in the middle of the cosmos. Mm-hmm. And here we are face to face with the universe now. And the acceleration that has taken place since that time is unparalleled in the annals of human development and evolution.
It's been described as that, sure.
And so here we stand now on the threshold of a huge shift of consciousness, and we're literally riding the wave of that consciousness. And some of us are more in the forefront than others. It doesn't make us any better than anyone else. It's just that we've chosen to move into the forefront because we feel the excitement, we feel the juice, and we want to have an organic experience with that rather than being passive about it. And then it comes out of choice. It comes out of pure choice. When the astrology chart is laid into that wave, so to speak, it gives us the opportunity to work with those cycles proactively rather than to be affected by them passively. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important distinction because all of a sudden, you know, we're taking responsibility for experiencing life. And I think the same is true in terms of body work. When we do body work sessions with people, it's not about fixing anything or it's not about stopping something that's going on in the body. Rather, it's helping people develop new strategies for working with the energy that's being presented in the moment. Mm-hmm. That our bodies are organic, that they're changing rapidly, they're changing in ways that our brain just cannot comprehend. Mm-hmm. And to work with that in a really proactive way is such a gift and such an opportunity that it takes body work and it takes astrology and it takes all these things to a much higher level of organization.
difference.
And certainly deepens our compassion for each other.
Right on. The compassion is a very, very key element in all of this.
No, it is. We're all in this together.
I love the image, too, that we are starting to become a planetary consciousness. We're no longer tied to our individual ideologies. That we're starting to begin, on a massive scale, to see ourselves as one planet, one species inhabiting, not a bunch of separate little churches and states. And this is the kind of the awakening, you know, you can call it the dawning of a new age. Certainly, astrologically, we all are waiting patiently for the Aquarian age to officially begin, which is, what, another 150 years off in terms of the actual line. But like in everything, you see the rays of light of the sun before it actually clears and becomes the sunrise or the earth set, as the case may be. So we're already seeing these rays, the lightning of the sky, and we're coming out of a darkened, people have thought of the Piscean Age as being the dark ages of consciousness, and now we're starting to see these kinds of things. What else can we look at in 2004, and is by your reckoning some of the astrological aspects that are setting up for this coming year?
Well, as you know, each month I have been publishing an astrological update, looking at the cycles and the rhythms. I did that because I was getting so many questions from people, like, what is going on? And rather than continuing to answer all the questions, I thought, well, let's just look at it comprehensively. Mm-hmm. And part of that has been to look at 2004, look ahead at the year and say, okay, what is going to be going on externally that's going to be impacting and influencing our internal movements. And if, again, go to the website and under, you'll see off the main index page, links that will take you to the astrological update and for January as well as for 2004. I look at 2004 as being the year of Venus. Catherine mentioned that a little earlier. Archetypally, Venus is an amazing energy. For a man, it would represent what appeals to him on the outside that he's asked to find within himself. For a woman, it's different. It's the essence of her being. It's how she chooses to express her feminine essence into the consciousness. And it can be done in a myriad of ways. There's 12 different signs in the zodiac, and each one of those signs reflects a specific signature. For example, a woman that has Venus in Scorpio would be very, very different in her expressions than a woman that has Venus in Cancer. Scorpio would be akin to, again, the child that wants to put their finger in the life, in the socket to experience life force. So a woman with Scorpio is very body oriented, very expressive in her sensual ways. A woman in Cancer, by contrast, is a woman that she's the responsible nurturer. She wants to take care of people. She wants to nurture and tend and care and all those things. So appreciating the distinction there takes us into the astrology of the year. This particular Venus cycle that we're coming up to is, in my estimation, significant for two reasons. Venus is going to be transiting across the face of the sun come June as she goes into this retrograde cycle. This is not an ordinary event. The last time that this event happened was 120 years ago. And it's a very unique cycle because it happens at the 120-year mark, and then 3 or 4 or 5 years later it happens again, and then it's another 105 years until it happens, and then another 3 or 4 years, and then back to the 120-year cycle again. And so unless somebody is 120 years old on this planet, you have not seen this transit occur in this lifetime. In fact, the transit will be visible on the other side of the world. It'll be mostly visible in Asia, Africa, Europe. It'll be visible at sunrise in the United States and in South America. Hawaii gets shut out on this one. We might have to move the island.
Yeah, we have the eclipse. But what do we look for when you say a transit across the sun? I mean,
well, if you, of course, it'll have to be telescopically with the correct filtering. But you'll see a round black dot, literally making a 6-hour passage across the face of the sun. So what's happening is that the Earth is positioning itself between on the outside of the sun, and Venus is crossing in that mid zone. and the orbits are lining up so that it's going right across the face of the sun. I say that's significant for the retrograde because symbolically the fuel of the sun is adding juice to Venus from our visual perspective.
It's radiating
that energy. And so the sun is shining light on the inner process of Venus. Mm-hmm. And so for women especially, the Venus retrograde is a big cycle because it takes them back into their inner feminine. And since it's retrograding, meaning going backwards in the sign of Gemini, the ones that are most affected by this are women that have Venus in Gemini, or 180 degrees difference, Venus in Sagittarius, or 90 degrees on either side, which we call in astrological cycles a square, and that would be either in the signs of Virgo or Pisces. So those four signs in particular are going to be impacted by this Venus retrograde. It will affect men differently because it's going to help them redefine what it is that they, what it is that appeals to them on the outside that they're asked to find within themselves. So the cycle itself starts about the middle of May and will continue all the way through August or so, with the most impactful part of the retrograde occurring in the month of June. And that will be a time for all of us, much like the Mars retrograde of last year, to go inward. Not with the aggressive energy of Mars, but more with the beauty and the sensuality of Venus. Gemini would be, as we said in the beginning of the show, the troubadour, the muse, the minstrel. It also would be the archetype of Peter Pan, or the playful fairy. So all of those, for example, women who have the Venus in Gemini, it's a great question to ask themselves, am I being playfully spontaneous in my life expression? Am I really accessing that joy and that frequency of mirth and laughter and all of that? And to go in to find those places that are not joyful or not expressing laughter would be part of the quest.
One of the things that came to my mind while you were describing the transition of Venus over the sun was, since I moved here, the energies around and surrounding the archetype of the divine feminine have been coming up time and time again. Just recently, last summer, the most popular book on the market was something called The Da Vinci Code, which recounted the whole trip of the
I might have been Da Vinci.
That's probably Da Vinci on the phone right now.
He wants royalties.
This is live radio, folks. We're just here trooping along on this 26th day of January. Retrograde Mercury, maybe, I don't know, but it's communication. But my point was this, that with the divine feminine energies, or that archetype of the divine feminine, you're talking about Venus. Of course, we all think about Venus as the divine feminine. And the energy of the sun filtering over that is almost like a new light being shed on the divine feminine energies that are becoming available to the masses now. So the prelude to this may have been something like the Da Vinci Code, which traced the Mary Magdalene mythology, the Knights Templar, and how the Grail blood was integrated and how it was held in secret, and was fought against because the patriarchal society wouldn't allow this divine feminine energy to be part of the playing surface. But now it's part of the playing surface. The divine energy, the feminine aspects, are something that's rising within all of us and something that now we're seeing signs in our society that are coming in. So that's kind of exciting because I really feel that this is part of this unfoldment, the new millennium, the new paradigm shift, the shift hitting the fan, as we're talking about, is a new take on this kind of energy and this new kind of information coming through from the feminine side.
I'll just say that's a great way to interpret it. As far as I really got a flash right through my body when even Joseph was describing it, that we're shining light through on the feminine, and it's a really it's an opportunity for everyone, men, women, everyone on the planet to, for this is a sacred timing for us to embrace that quality within each of us.
Well, we see it as a growing time, a healing time. the feminine energies, the gecko time, is agreeing with that. Do you see it as a time of upheaval at all because of those energies, or say other aspects of Pluto or Uranus, which are active at this time?
Well, I would say that the Venus time is not about upheaval. It's certainly about feeling the nurturing, compassionate parts of our being. Last year, 2003, we had the year of Mars and Mars retrograde, and Mars was doing an enormous dance with Uranus and with Saturn in the archetypes. And look at all the war element that was introduced. Mars is often associated with the element of war. So Venus presents us with the antithesis of that, is to find the peace within ourselves, to find the expression of femininity. There are certainly other aspects that are at play at this time that sort of throw a different rhythm into this mix also. We are in a time of enormous upheaval in the world. People are on edge. People are feeling pushed. People are feeling a need to kind of go inward and protect themselves. And it seems to me, as opportunities present themselves, where there is the greatest amount of darkness, there is also an equal amount of light. And our ability to find the peace and to find the light within our beings can serve as a strong example as we move into 2004, 2005, 2006. So there's the opportunity. Just at the end of December, starting in early January, Uranus went into the sign of Pisces. Now, Uranus first went into Pisces last March, first time in 84 years, because in the external we know that Uranus takes 84 years to circuit the sun. And so in the astrological way, as Uranus moves into Pisces, it's a very different energy than Uranus in Aquarius, where it resided for the past 8 years from 1995. Uranus in Aquarius being the theme of technology and communication and the future and all of that, That's where the internet became bigger than life. It's where the dot-coms became bigger than life. Everything got very fast and very technological. And now here's Uranus moving into the sign of Pisces, and it's starting to affect change in our global consciousness, because that's what Pisces is about. It's how we connect with the masses, how we connect with the oneness of everything. We see that in the dolphin pods. Mm-hmm. And when we swim, how the dolphin pods come together. So Uranus is now moving into Pisces, and as I mentioned at the end of December, it moved into there for the second time, and it'll stay there until 2011, 2012, which coincides with the Mayan calendar shift, and takes us Uranus into the sign of Aries, a new beginning. So during this
fire sign now, is Pisces a water sign?
Pisces is a water sign.
Okay, and then an air sign out of Aquarius. So.
And Aries will be the fire sign. Mm-hmm. So as we go into the water element, we go into the feeling. We go into the feeling. How do we connect in a feeling way as a planetary group?
Again, very feminine aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Air being communication or more mental, and water associated with heart and feeling or emotional kinds of things. So it seems like this whole liquidness that keeps coming into my way of thinking is coming a bit about.
But,
oh, that's exciting.
By the time that this cycle completes itself in 2011, 2012, it would not surprise me that we start seeing the dissolving of our national boundaries in this world, because Uranus brings in unexpected change. Mm-hmm. Uranus is very revolutionary. And when it's working itself through the sign of Pisces, it's working literally with the global consciousness. And for anyone that's skeptical about that, just look back in time and see how quickly the Soviet Empire fell apart. What seemed like to be one of the premier world powers all of a sudden fragmented and fell apart. And it reminds me that none of this is permanent. None of what we perceive to be permanent is permanent. And if the only thing that's predictable in this world is change.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. Well, we're coming up on the last half hour here. I'd like to take a little short break and play some music by one of our local pod people, Tiger Paw, from her album Heart of the Matter. So we'll listen to that, come back, talk more astrology, and then get into some of the aspects of this tandem body work, which I'm interested in sharing as well. So we'll be back in just a few. staying with us. And if you've been with us throughout the show, you've been privy to some really interesting information from Catherine and Joseph about everything from astrology and tarot decks. Joseph was just telling me he's going to put up some information on his website. Right now, I will put up the archives of this file for future reference. So if you are coming in late on the show, or perhaps you'd like to come back and listen to it again, both of those archives will be available, one on dolphinville.com, and then Joseph will put up that archive link from his website as well. In addition to that, Joseph mentioned that he does send out a monthly newsletter that sort of gives everybody an update of what's happening astrologically and etherically. And I would like to encourage you to, if that's of interest to you, go ahead and check that out on the website. It's a simple form. You click a button, and you can be part of that monthly newsletter that is sent out. Joseph and Catherine also do make sojourns into the mainland. We try to do it as infrequently as possible, but it is something that we do take some pleasure in sharing with people, and we pick and choose our moments when our energy is high and where we have some programs that we can share. So do keep an eye out on the website. They will make announcements to when they plan to be in different areas of the country. In fact, if you're interested in hearing more specifically, I would encourage you to go ahead, make contact with them. Find out if they're coming, and if they're not coming, make a suggestion. Maybe you can arrange something and have them come and join your community and share some of this really cool information. Well, we've been looking at the 2004 Astrological Review. Joseph has shared some of the prominent things about the planet Venus, and we've learned that Venus and Mars, as well as the Moon and the Sun and Jupiter, and these are some of the major, major players in our astrological futures. And Joseph has promised me that he's now going to take this to another level, where he'll take a Voyager card and see how that's playing in for our aspects of 2004. So here we go with Joseph drawing. Actually, it's Catherine drawing the new card.
Draw now, please.
Okay.
I have picked the Actor card, and the Actor card is the Man of Wands.
Wow.
It is also known as the Shaman card of the deck. The Actor shows many faces and knows how to play with magic.
I see.
It's also considered the free agent card of the deck. So in picking that card specific to 2004, it's how do we play with magic? Literally, it's a personification card. That is, it's embodied in the male essence. It doesn't mean it's about a man or it's a woman. In fact, this particular card is of a woman who has a mask on that's of a man.
Uh-huh.
So there's that trickster coyote energy that's part of this card too. Yeah, definitely a shapeshifter energy. And so this is the essence of what we can create in 2004, that we can be this this person. There's one thing I also wanted to mention about 2004, and this is a very practical note. One of the things about a Venus retrograde, as I mentioned, is that it's an inward time for women. I would not consider it a good time for a person to embark on the path of marriage. That if somebody wants to create a union of marriage, and the gecko's agreeing with me here, I would encourage
them. For those of you who don't know, the gecko is a sign that we all use. When they chirp, we listen.
Well, the retrograde, the most intense part of the retrograde is May the 17th to June the 29th, and that would not be a time to go through the marriage vows, and instead it would be better to wait before or after. So those of you who are contemplating marriage during that time, I would encourage you to think outside of the box. And although it's nice to have a June wedding.
Spring wedding, come on.
Spring wedding. It may have to be like June May. Maybe May is a nice time in the mainland.
Right.
Or more into August or September. But go inward. Allow yourself to really be inward during this time.
Mm. Okay, so maybe an inner marriage might be more appropriate.
Yeah, definitely an inner marriage. It would be a lot less expensive, too.
Well, you mentioned the card of the magician, or I should say not the magician, but the actor, who acts as a shamanic magical card. It also tipped off in my mind, magic I always associate with romance, which I always associate with the feeling aspect. Again, Venus and magic seem to go hand in hand. as a new way of information coming in through the feeling centers, through the heart centers.
If I can just mention to the reading that you had with me the other day, it was about how do I go into the feeling centers? How do I touch into my heart energy? How do I express my heart through my senses rather than how do I think about things or how do I try to figure things out?
And Gemini is quite a challenge.
Yeah, it's a wonderful opportunity to become more of a whole person. That is, not only is your brain functioning on a high level, but also that the heart is in tandem with that, mm-hmm. and the heart is expressing itself through your feeling centers.
So speaking of tandem, you brought up the word.
What a segue.
Great segue. Gemini we associate with the twins, dual aspects. The card in the tarot is the lovers, which are two aspects, partnership coming together. You chose that word to represent the work that you're trying to do, specific to the tandem body work that you do. Now, you both are trained as body workers in different modalities. How have you combined that, and what does that feel like? What is it exactly? Now, you have some you bring and he brings. Clue me in here. What's it about?
Well, I'd say that both Joseph and I have a lot of tools in our toolbox. And what's interesting, I find that when we're working with people that we initiate a dance with a person. I mean, I can be in somebody's field or I can touch someone and I can get information about that person. So the body's telling me and the body is guiding me where to go. And we will work with you directly on the body, physically touching the body. We'll also work in your energy field above the body. We may use crystals under the table. We have different essences that we use. Also, something else that I found very helpful is bringing the head and heart together by initiating dialogue. So we'll start, for example, as we said earlier, by looking at the chart, giving a real brief review, what's up right now? What are the cycles going on? And we'll use the Voyager cards to add more context for that. Then when we begin, we really call on the divine energy. We call on divine energy within us and above us and here in Hawaii. And this really supports us in holding the space. As we feel different areas of the body gives us clues as to what's up. So, for example, Joseph may get something really clearly that, oh, what's going on for you when you were 10 years old? And this may trigger a memory for someone of something that happened, which is locked in their body, which they may or may not be aware of. And by touching that area or by supporting this area energetically, and by even initiating dialogue with this person so that they can begin talking about it, it brings together mentally and physically
and emotionally.
And emotionally, absolutely, of course, to move the energy, emotion, energy in motion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Emotion.
When I have moved through my healing process, I have become a very strong proponent of the notion that less is more. Given how accelerated everything has become, a person doesn't need to be on a table for 2 hours or 3 hours in order to really get rejuvenated and open up new possibilities in their body.
We talked about how the dolphins seem to mm-hmm. Totally toast us in a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
It doesn't take hours of time of floating in the water.
Indeed. And so when a person lays down on the table and we start to work with that person energetically, we're not only, as Catherine said, attuning to their body rhythms, but we're also attuning to each other in our dance. And there's a synergy that occurs in the various modalities that we use that take it to a whole different strata or a whole different level of vibration. Mm-hmm. So that given that there's four hands in play here, that's a lot of awareness to take in. Mm-hmm. And so that a 1 hour session, including a look at the chart and the astrology cards, mm-hmm. The Voyager cards, is plenty, mm-hmm. plenty of information for a person to integrate and process.
So you're not necessarily doing like a massage, kneading the muscles in the traditional sense, but you're finding intuitively key areas of the body that through your touch and through your intention are actually releasing blocks.
Absolutely. So when we see our clients, they lay fully closed on the table. We use the word Gemini awakening, and just going back again to the cards, Gemini is a six, and that's the lovers, and one of the cards of the minor arcana, the six, is called synergy, and synergy implies the 1 + 1 = 3.
Mm-hmm.
So the tandem body work that we offer, I find something new is created when Joseph and I are working together. I mean, we each individually do our own work with people, and that has its own essence and its own energy. But when someone comes to us and specifically asks or requests to work with us together in a tandem bodywork session, there's a very high intention there because there's another force or there's something else that's coming in that's assisting in that process that's much bigger usually than either he or I know at the time. So it's a very, very transformative experience.
It sounds like it's a new way of instigating the partnership mentality, partnership energies, where there's balance. You guys are both bringing your own individual energies together, and then in a true partnership situation, the sum is greater than the whole of the parts, which is the definition of synergy. So a synergistic system that you're incorporating to promote healing in people.
Yeah, I do know, too, that it's absolutely essential that both Catherine and I receive, that is, we receive body work from other people, because if I'm going to touch a person, I want to be able to know that I have been through that process too, and I can't help somebody do something that I'm not willing to do myself. And in that process of being with a person, it's appreciating how our bodies are dynamic, how they're organic, and also our body's capacity to build what I call critical tension is a very important part. It's much like when you go to sneeze, that there's a build up, and then all of a sudden a release. Well, our bodies really need to have that capacity, not only to build energy, but also to dissipate the energy. And so it takes us all back into the process of that it's important that we're touched, and that we can touch people together, or individually for that matter, is a wonderful gift, a very humbling gift at that. That we get to share sacred space with people. Because to me, the body's sacred. That the body has all the wisdom, all the awareness, all the understanding, that the DNA vibrates at its own frequency and in its own way, and that when the body feels safe enough to bring the brain in on the news, do we make the connection of what is ready to be released and what is ready to be expressed. So it really looks at healing from a body perspective rather than a spiritual perspective. I mean, we're all spiritual beings. Mm-hmm. We've all can go out into the ethers. We all can meditate. But our willingness to be deep into our bodies and rooted and grounded and allow ourselves to have an experience so that we don't over-associate ourselves with our body, but rather look at our body as an experiential path for opening up new awareness, especially on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say this to our audience, too, that children are it's just as important for children to receive as it is for adults to receive.
Mm-hmm.
That children that are coming in today, as I mentioned, have high vibrational fields and need to be fed differently than they have in the past. It's not about waiting for a child to have a cold or waiting for a child to be sick. It's rather, how can I help this child open their system up? How can they express more of the gifts that they are? How can they feel more into their beingness? How can they make clearer choices in their life?
Mm-hmm.
All of that comes from having a clear nervous system and a body energy that vibrates in a different frequency.
Mm-hmm. So when you do the so-called rejuvenation retreats, as you call them, is that done for more than one person, or do you recommend that one person comes in so the two of you can focus on that on a single basis?
Well, right now we have a space for one or two people to come and stay and visit with us.
I see.
But we encourage, I mean, if people are already coming to Big Island for a retreat and they want to catch up with us before or after their stay here on Big Island, we are pretty flexible right now with how we work with people.
Mm-hmm.
So we can invite people to be with us and stay with us for 4 or 5 days,
mm-hmm.
Stay overnight. There's beautiful land and fresh fruit, and we're close by to great swimming holes.
Well, often one thinks of retreats as a couple of days of getting away, you know, and there's so many different facilities around here that accommodate those different kinds of things, but I was just curious how yours was going to work in that regard.
Well, we really customize the retreat for their specific needs, and we definitely encourage people to receive body work while they're staying with us. I mean, that's one of our greatest gifts, I feel, that we offer. So if people are going out swimming with dolphins, or they are, we are taking them to Volcano and they're getting downloads and information, then they can come back home with us and we can do some body work to help them really integrate these experiences and bring it on home.
Do you find that one session is adequate to start the shifting within somebody? Do you see like real kinds of things happening with people after one session then?
Yeah, there's definitely a profound shift in people's energy field, and it opens them up to new possibilities. Mm-hmm. And where that goes is a matter of one's highest intention. Mm. Literally, a person opens a door that cannot be closed again. Mm. It's a door of awareness that life has changed, and what has been predictable or what has been safe for you before isn't necessarily going to be predictable or safe going forward.
And you can't not know anymore.
I'd say from the people that we worked with in the last 3.5 years together in the tandem work, usually the first or second sessions are where the big ahas come in. Mm-hmm. That's what it's really cracking open, that initial layer, and the big ahas come in, and follow-up sessions are much more helpful for integrating and gentle mm-hmm. processing.
Mm-hmm. So do you work with anybody else? I mean, you guys have your tandem thing. Maybe there's some psychotherapist that you would recommend if you you're saying yes. So you have other people that you sort of segue into, so to speak. Huh?
Yeah, both of us find ourselves working with different retreat groups that come into the island. Mm-hmm. People contract our services and ask us to work with their groups. Mm-hmm. So they don't necessarily stay where we are. We'll travel to wherever the retreat's taking place. And also we turn around and recommend different people for people that come to us on the mainland, or we're both strong proponents of network spinal analysis, which is wonderful, wonderful work. For people that would like to learn more about network spinal analysis, there's a website, innateintelligence.com. Innateintelligence.com.
I've heard of network chiropractic.
Yeah, network spinal analysis is a higher evolved form of network chiropractic. It has evolved to some extraordinary levels. We find that people that experience network have energy systems that are much more receptive to touch than those that have not experienced network. And so we encourage people to seek out the network practitioners. So there's certainly a path that takes place back and forth in one's healing path. People also that come to the island don't necessarily stay with us, but do avail themselves of the different services that we provide. Mm-hmm. So you can come and get a reading, for example, or look at your chart, or receive a hot stone massage, or different things like that, and feel nurtured from the experience.
Well, this is a reminder for our listeners. If you're so interested on Dolphinville, we do have a list of services and service providers, people who do sacred journeys and do different healing modalities that assist us in this transitional time. We're coming close to the end of our time together today. It's been really marvelous to be able to share and just have a casual Dolphinville dialogue with some of the people in the neighborhood here. Is there anything you care to add as we're wrapping things up here, either or both of you?
Well, I just picked the Voyager card for everybody, and it's the Ace of Worlds, which is a success card.
Wow.
And this is the confidence card of the deck. This is not about becoming successful. It's about knowing your gift, knowing the gift that you are, and knowing that there's a tremendous degree of success that comes from expressing your gift, that you don't have to do what everybody else wants you to do, that you're here to do your own thing, your own rhythm, sing your own song. And in that song, there's just life's abundance.
That's a marvelous message. Catherine?
Aloha.
Thank you.
Aloha, aloha.
Well, we are each a cosmic fingerprint. Like a snowflake, we have an individual expression that is only ours and unique onto creation. We are here to express the glory of all that is in just such a way that no other living creature can do. That's really the miracle of who we are. And we're trying to discover it a little bit at a time. And it's taken us many, many years and generational pains and stretching. But I really feel confident. I'm very optimistic. I think that that Ace of Wands is the success card. And that
it's a world. It's a world.
The world. The Ace of Worlds is a success card. And we will be moving into these things.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you very much. I want to thank you for joining us.
You're very
and encourage
welcome.
People again to check out Gemini-Awakening.com. It is a wonderful website that's being put up by Photon.net, who is our great provider here for the services. Randy has integrated himself into our community here in so many ways, and I'm happy to be a part of that and share some of these interesting byways of information for the listening public out there. If you have any questions that I mentioned, you can send them to broadcast at dolphinville.com. We've run out of our time. We won't be able to answer directly, but perhaps in the future show I can get Joseph and Catherine to come back and maybe we'll have an opportunity to address some of those questions live, or if you do decide to send them in. We'll continue with this series of dialogues. Next week, if all goes right, I'll have a hyperdimensional physicist as a guest with the scientists who are devising a new level of understanding of our universe. You've heard about, we talked briefly about our friend Newton and Einstein. Well, there's another level that's coming in, folks. We have space, and we have space in movement. And our good friend and local community person, Nassim Haramein, will be here to share some of his new theories and an actual new mathematical model of how the universe is really one big, marvelous, unified field. It's the advancement of Einstein's famous unified field theories. So he also uses crop circles and the Mayan calendar and the I Ching and the Kabbalah Tree of Life as ways of giving us examples of how all of this fits together very neatly, sort of indicating that maybe the ancient awareness is coming back now. So I encourage you all to check us out next week, same time, same program. And I look forward to seeing you then. This is Dolphinus for all of us here in Dolphinville saying be well and swim free. I'll look for you on the other side. See ya.